Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
How's it going, everybody? Paul?
I'm feeling the post-election hangover here.
Post-election hangover for Paul versus the regular hangover.
versus my normal Monday hangover.
Right, no. But you know what? Speaking of post-election hangovers, I do, you know,
people, it sounds like you have a cold or something.
I've been screaming at the TV for all night, so yeah. that's why. But you were correct when you estimated that was what happened. But I do want to reach out to a lot of, we have, and people are watching me on camera. I promise I'll put it away in a minute because I just realize that not only did we have 7 previous guests, but we actually have 8 previous guests of the Rad Life
that actually prevailed
yesterday in their own elections.
So you're the stock picker. You're the candidate picker.
You know what? I'll tell you. I was kind of thrilled because the other thing too is we cannot be accused of being one sided or the other. This radio show actually has highlighted people on both sides of the aisle on city council elections runs, on congressional election runs. You know, across Orange County. And I want to just take a very quick minute because, again, it ties in actually with our show that we have today.
I don't see how.
You know what? I'll tell you how. And I'll leave our listeners with this tease, and then we'll connect it for them. Because every single one of these people that actually ran for elected office yesterday and won, okay, said yes to basically serving the public, said yes to stepping up and actually doing something out of their comfort level. Because this day and age, it's a heck of a lot easier for me to just stay behind my door, get in my car in the morning, drive off, do my thing, come back, not put myself out there, not stick my neck out, not basically try to do something that could be considered controversial, or basically have the unleashing of holy hell on me, basically, yeah, because somebody doesn't agree with me and feels entitled to attack me in any shape or form.
That's my motto.
Because, you know, lay low. If anybody's been sleeping, let me tell you, the number one blood sport in the United States is politics.
Yeah, wow.
Okay? And yesterday was an example, and the last 2 years were an example, and we're looking at another 2 years, and I don't know that it's getting any better, because we have a thirst and a hunger for sensationalism.
And it works.
And it started, you know.
If it bleeds, it leads. That's what drives us to the news and reality TV, and everything here. Scream radio. We're trying to be streaming radio, not screaming radio.
Even though people who listen in know that we talk over each other and we scream over each other. But for disclaimer, this
Shut
is
up!
Streaming radio.
Shut up!
But truly, you know, I do want to reach out and I want to congratulate every single one of them for, you know.
So name them off quickly.
So Dr. Jose Moreno in Anaheim got reelected to his seat in his district. Congratulations, Jose.
That was not an easy slam dunk. He wasn't.
No, there was a lot of money actually, and this is another thing. A lot of dark money goes in, even if you're districted, there's still dark money that goes in. It's put towards or against particular candidates for a whole myriad of special interests. The other lady, Farah Ann Khan, who ran for city council.
She ran in Mission Viejo?
She ran in Irvine. She ran in Irvine last time around, did not win. She ran again. And I want to really, really say congratulations to Farah because almost everybody I'm going to name, maintained a very positive and did not get dragged into the mud.
Yes.
Okay, some maybe a little bit more than others.
And I think that was kind of a takeaway as they went through the night. The angry left, the so-called progressive candidates who were like,
there's anger on both sides.
I understand, but the angriest candidates on the left did not win by and large across the board. Beto down in Texas and Stacey Abrams in Georgia and
regardless, but the thing is again
going the more back, moderate. Tone,
but bringing it back to again what we're going to be doing on the show here today is there's a lot of saying no.
Yes.
There's a lot of arguing for your own limitations or the limitations of your party or the limitations of your city or whatever. There's a lot of, and unfortunately from the vantage point of anonymity behind the screen and the internet, it's a lot of this sort of no. I'm just going to say what's wrong with the thing. I'm just going to point out how things will not work versus roll up your sleeves and actually do something, right? And it used to be where we actually had some downtime where you couldn't just be doing this 24/7. It's not just the news cycle that's 24/7. It's friggin', you know, like just stirring the pot on the internet is 24/7, right? And that's without interference or collusion. But, you know, Farah Khan, congratulations, my friend. Very well deserved. Two campaigns. Finally got on there. I can't wait. Irvine is lucky to have you on the city council. Our friend Diane Dixon, former mayor of Newport Beach, ran for re-election. Diane, congratulations. She was a guest on our show recently.
A Republican.
Yeah, a Republican friend of mine. Again, I hate to tell people.
I'm just trying to point
city
it
council,
out.
City council elections are nonpartisan, by the way, people.
I know, not I
know,
supposed to be.
I know we don't behave like that, but they are nonpartisan. And Harley Ruda, who...
And let me just back up, because Diane was a perfect example. I've quoted many times here. I wish there were more... You know, I don't support the R's anymore. They pushed me out. I'm a liberal R.
All
I'm saying is she was very good about saying we need to get more dialogue. We need to be more bipartisan. Yeah. We need to be... she came across as a very reasonable person, not another... partisan.
And anybody who's interested, those shows are on the podcast, on the Podbean site for The Rad Life. They're also on Facebook. You know, they're really timeless, and it gives you an insight into these people. So Jose, Farah, Diane, Harley Ruda, who was on here, who won Rohrabacher's old seat yesterday. Congratulations, Harley. It was really great for you to take the time to be. And I know you had a really rough and tough campaign to run, and ran it again very positively, even though some of the advertising that was coming from both sides got a little ugly in the end there. Mike Levin down south in Daryl Issa's old district. Congratulations, Mike, for that. That was awesome. I've been watching you try to do that for the last year and got picked from the primaries, and then ran again. Mike's been running a very, very positive race. I'm glad to have him as my congressman. Dan Bain, city council in San Clemente. Dan is a friend, and again, city council is better off having Dan on city council in San Clemente. Can't wait. That's really in my own hometown. My friend Ahmed Zahra, who ran for the new district in Fullerton. He was on the show as well, former documentary movie maker, really, really positive campaign, amazingly positive campaign. And they kept trying to drag him in the mud, and he's like, no, I'm not going there. And then, last but not least, Greg Raths got reelected in Mission Viejo. Greg's a friend. He's been on the show a couple
Another
of times.
Republican?
Yep. So, again, congratulations to everybody. Thank you for saying yes for the benefit of us citizens out there, because a lot of us basically are too scared, busy, whatever, sometimes.
And Greg's a good example of what you're talking about, because Greg had a very successful career in the military.
Flight...
was that his name?
Yeah, Snake.
He obviously ran the El Toro Air Base here for a while. He was a military attaché to the president under Clinton.
And he got maligned by a bunch of people they ran against.
Just because he got assigned to the White House.
Yeah. He actually was assigned to the White House and served under Clinton, like which was a military person.
Yeah, he was supposed to quit or something, I guess.
For the pleasure of the president.
And so, anyway, and then when he did all that, he retired and had a successful business career for a while, and then thought, now what am I going to do? And decided to take on the ugly world of politics and jumped in as a complete unknown.
Yeah.
And almost won a seat against in...
These are all very, very... high caliber people, and I have been very, very fortunate to have had the chance to sit down with them and know them and so call some of them friend. They basically, really, the common thread between all of them, which it's not why wasn't my intention to bring this around like this, but the real common thread, honestly, is for them to step up and say yes for what they were.
So how does that relate to your guest?
So with that being said, and I'm closing my laptop like I said I was going to, okay, I would like to introduce my guest, who I had the fortune to be on his show just recently, Jim Riley, who basically has a podcast called...
The answer is yes.
Yeah. Jim, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I guess everybody that I named before must have listened to Jim's podcast and basically said yes.
That's true. Right? That was the one common theme they all brought up. All of them were hesitant until they heard Jim's podcast, and then they said yes.
They jumped right in. Let's hope that was the case. I'd love to have that many more listeners, right?
So let's jump right in, because the interesting thing about that, and you and I talked about this a lot, is just the nature of the journey, right? The self-growth, the awareness, the getting to the point, because saying yes is it requires a certain amount of, what do we want to call it, craziness or courage? I mean, whichever one you want to say, right?
But a little bit of both.
A little bit of both, yeah. Right? So it's not something you necessarily wake up one morning and go, I'm going to say yes to everything, unless you're Jim Carrey and you've got a movie, right? called Yes Man. But there is a growth. There is a journey to get to that point, right? And I think, and I want to get to that, but I want a little background on you. Because did you wake up, you know, I'm not even going to embarrass you and say how old you are, but did you wake up one day and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do? Or did you find your way to this?
Well, I think we all find our way to what we become. And hopefully it's through a series of, you know, passionate decisions and opportunities that people are happy to be doing. And you didn't make too many left or wrong turns along the way.
Sometimes those left or right wrong turns are part of the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's learning from them and bettering yourself,
right,
and being able to look back and understand what you did right, what you did wrong, and how you got to where you're at.
You know, so, if you don't roll that bowling ball in the gutter every once in a while, you don't know that you need to stay out of there, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So, you know, my journey started, well, I'm 50, so I'm happy to admit that. My journey started when...
The only reason I didn't want to tell people that is because I'm older than you.
Yeah, then you're going to have to, yeah.
And you're wiser than me, so I don't know. So you're 50. And what did you start out doing? I mean, did you have a sort of, you know, career-wise, let's say, or, you know, I mean, you're a local, right?
Yeah.
Let's paint the picture a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a Southern California native. I only stepped away from Southern Cal for a few years to be up in Lake Tahoe and kind of re-center myself, if you will. But, you know, I like to talk about childhood in my background because I was molded in a family that hard work was a part of what we do every day. My father was a retired sheriff due to an injury on the job. And to make ends meet, he did just about a little bit of everything. You know, he literally drove a truck across the country, worked in whether it was mechanics on cars or building fences, a little bit of everything. And as kids, we helped and adapted to what he was doing to make money and make ends meet. And we didn't want for anything as kids, but we also understood the importance of a dollar.
Yeah.
And at a very young age, I became an entrepreneur in making my own money and, you know, kind of furthering myself in the things that I wanted because we couldn't as a family afford a new bike or that car when I turned 16. So I always was looking for those opportunities. And I think what happened to me is I learned to say yes from my dad. Because I saw the result of that, right? So after he retired from being a sheriff, he became a cross-country truck driver for Swift. You see him out on the freeways. Yep. Not an easy job, not a glamorous job, but it paid the bills. But what I also observed through my father was saying yes to work on the weekends. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I need a fence built over at my house. Do you know how to do that? Yeah, I know how to do it. I'll build your fence. Grabs his three boys, and we come over, and we built a fence for the neighbor.
Yep.
And it was every weekend of activities like that and realized, okay, there's a little cash at the end of the day, and it takes the family a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized the value of saying yes to opportunities that came your way and not being afraid to do them. You know, here I am 40 years later, and if the fence needs to be repaired at the house or the roof needs a repair or something, I'm not afraid to jump in and do it because I learned it way back when.
Right.
So I modeled my father when I was very young in saying yes.
That's awesome. And you mentioned that you consider yourself an entrepreneur from way back. What was one of the first things that you recall that you can say, well, you know, this was something I was interested in and I pursued it?
Well, the first two things that I ever sold, it's almost hilarious to talk about it, but my mom would send us to school. This is junior high. Again, I like to reference back some of these molding years. She would send us to school with $2 versus worth of lunch money.
Yeah.
And we walked by the grocery store. So I'd spend those $2 on packs of gum.
Uh-huh.
And then I'd go to school and sell individual pieces of gum and quadruple my money. So, you know, my first business, I was selling gum until I got caught. And then we started, there's got to be one in this crazy office here somewhere, but we used to have these porcelain things that you'd paint, and they went through a series of making rock band names like AC/DC or Led Zeppelin, and I'd paint them and sell them at school, and people put them on their hats. So,
I have one at home.
Okay, there you go. But you know, I learned at a young age, like, wow, I can create something or purchase something and then upcharge for it and make a profit.
Right.
You know, then I could go have a better lunch, or I could put that money towards saving for something. And again, it was those early formidable years. Now, I didn't realize that I was saying yes at the time. Sure. I was just doing.
You're right? Doing.
I need a couple more bucks.
So what was it? What was the motivation? I mean, obviously the money was part of it, but was there other motivation? Was there sort of an excitement and interest? Anything else that you got out of doing this, even back then, if you look about it, or was it just purely the money?
You know, to me, it was just fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that if you can understand that about not only an early time in your life in conducting some type of activity or business, but even later in life, that it should be fun at work.
Yeah.
You should enjoy what you do. And for me, to answer your question, you know, showing up at school and then the fellow schoolmates would go, hey, what kind of gum did you get today, right? Did you get the watermelon like I wanted? And you had this camaraderie within your own little business, and then you'd walk away or you'd make it to lunch with a few more bucks. To me, it was always fun to earn.
Right.
And then I remember specifically looking forward to going home and painting those little characters, picking out the colors and trying to make the coolest one so that it sold the next day at school, right? To me, the whole process was fun.
Right. And it wasn't just the result. It was also the process that you were engaged in that also gave you some satisfaction.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I ask the question is because sometimes we don't take a minute and acknowledge that is also part of the reward that we get in this, and it's not just only the end result and what money is being made. Obviously, that is very much an important factor, but there's other rewards along the way. So what happens after you're out of middle school?
Well, and this is a perfect segue.
Where do you go after gum? I mean, I don't know.
Hamburgers. I worked for my grandparents for a little while down in Newport Beach in Balboa. We had some hamburger stands down there.
Oh, cool.
Back in the late 70s, early 80s were formidable years. You know, you're 16, working at the beach, having a good time.
Oh, that sounds like it sucks.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible. Surfing for lunch, you know. But, you know, my first real big job was I started with In-N-Out Burger at 16 and a half. My brother was already there in a management program. People that know me know that my brother's the CEO of the company, and he's been there 35 years now. I spent 12 years at that company, and that was my first real big career opportunity, changing things. By the time I left, I'd ran the busiest store in company history. It was up on Inglewood Boulevard in the 405. Mm-hmm. We sold 1 million hamburgers our first year of being in business. It was the first time one of their locations sold 1 million hamburgers. But I also was part of an R&D crew there, establishing what the schematics were for the restaurants, new hiring of stores and things like that. But, you know, I wanted to touch back on that having fun part.
Sure.
And a lot of people know, especially here in Orange County, that you can make a lot of money working for In-N-Out Burger.
Yep.
I was 26 years old, making over 150 grand.
Yep.
And those numbers are public now. People
So we got to say that one again. As a store manager?
As a store manager. Yep.
Oh, In-N-Out?
Yeah, and they just published an article, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, average store managers making 150 plus.
Yep.
Average store manager, not even the guys that run the busy
store. I've seen so many stories through the years of people who work for that organization absolutely love it. Kids start in high school and literally stay with them their whole life. And you think In-N-Out?
Yeah, great career, great benefits, school programs, 401k, medical, everything you can possibly imagine, and great leadership. I don't just say that.
Family-run business,
Family-run business. But, you know, for me, going back to the fun conversation, I wasn't having fun.
Mm.
I made a lot of money. It's a great company. But I wasn't having fun in my career because I was more of an entrepreneur. And that's where I realized that making money, having what most people would consider an incredible career opportunity, wasn't for me. And realizing that, knowing that there's something else out there for me, I started becoming more of an entrepreneur in my mindset and what I wanted to do.
And you and I have talked about this, is that if you are cut from that cloth, you may go down a path that, I mean, you could argue that In-N-Out Burger necessarily as a career path is not necessarily a traditional career path in itself. However, here's a situation that all the things are in alignment, everything, you could stick around here. This is a company which, rare as it is today, even back then probably, that you could count on basically having a career for a lifetime with, to feel satisfied, be able to put money on, you know, food on the table, build a savings, all of those pieces that everybody strives to through the work years, right? But if you're cut from the cloth that you're talking about, the one that you and I know instinctively, there's a dissatisfaction. There's an emptiness. There's a part that's not being fulfilled. There's a part of your soul that's not being fed. Ironically, you're in a burger, but you're still hungry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is where you come to a realization, even if it's temporary, that you have to pursue a different something, and you may not know what that is sometimes. And the reason I'm only bringing it up, Jim, because a lot of people need to be allowed to hear that it's okay to feel that.
Yeah.
Versus feel wrong about feeling that when everybody around you from the with their best intentions for you are trying to guide you towards a more standard, safe, you know, achievable, result-oriented goal or pathway, and you're basically, this is still, there's still something missing, and I feel wrong about this, and maybe it's right or wrong. I'm telling you, you probably are echoing the same thing. From people that are looking at it from the other side, pursue that path. Check it out. Try it at least to see where it goes, because otherwise you'll always have that hunger.
It's the whole notion of my podcast, The Answer Is Yes, because we want people to hear real examples of somebody's career history, mm-hmm. and what they were doing and why they said yes to that next step. And oftentimes, as is the case with me, I had to say no to a continued career with In-N-Out and had to say yes to something else that most people would consider very risky.
What did you say yes to?
I said yes to moving out of Southern California and just restarting myself. And literally, the notion was, I'm going to move to Tahoe, mm-hmm. take a minimum wage job, mm-hmm. and figure it out all over again. And when I say minimum wage, I got a job at the Harvey's Casino Buffet for a short period of time until I was discovered by the local ski resort up there. But I was willing to sacrifice all that to figure out what was going to fill my soul, mm-hmm. in terms of what made me happy, what earned a living that I could live with, and I could grow within myself to be that a different person, right?
Did you give yourself any kind of timeline on taking that journey of discovery? Did you give your was actually physically removing yourself from a familiar environment a conscious decision? Did you cause, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Did you take yourself out of that comfort zone in order to increase the chances of you being steadfast in this pursuit?
I want to take a little left turn real quick to help you understand that decision process.
Yeah.
I was doing some work with the local church here, Mariners Church in Newport Beach,
okay.
and they were doing some mission trips down in Mexico. And I'd gone on one with them, and basically for the day trip that we had a dozen people, we had a $5,000 budget, we went and bought some food and some things that the orphanages needed down in Baja. We hit six or seven locations and then came back home. And when I got home, I felt so guilty about the life that I was living, making all this money at In-N-Out. The weekend before I was in Mammoth, I probably blew $5,000 on snowboards and food and condo and all that stuff. And I just realized I was living my life for the wrong reasons, that I was selfishly living and taking when I could give so much to others that are so deserving.
Mm.
And you could see it in those kids' eyes, how grateful they were. The supplies that we took for $5,000 was going to last them a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
So when I left In-N-Out, I thought, you know, I'm going to start doing for others and not myself selfishly, right? So, no, I didn't have a time frame when I went up there. I just thought, I'm going to just go figure this out and be a different person. I'm going to live for other people. And what I found in that is that I was able to be more of myself, mm-hmm. and not chase materialistic things, but just get to know people.
Maybe get to know more about yourself.
More about myself, and not being afraid just to reach out. You mm-hmm. know, get to know the guy at the coffee shop, or mm-hmm. you know, the vendors that you use, or at the grocery store. Say hi to the lady walking down the aisle, and just be a person again. And within that, you start finding more about yourself and things that you love, that you're passionate about. And I've always found that putting out that type of vibration in the world, things come to you.
How old were you?
I was 28.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a young age to figure out that I didn't want to chase the money,
that's
and it
pretty,
was more about
pretty,
giving.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Most people go their whole life without getting to that point.
Well, I think a lot of it for me is going through, and I don't want to say they were hardships as a kid because they weren't necessarily hard, but just learning a lot about life and working and what it takes to put together a family, a unit,
mm-hmm.
and work together to have
mm-hmm.
what we had,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think going through that in an early phase, you know, working with my dad at 8 and 9 years old on my weekends,
right.
Right? Instead of just being a kid. You know, some parents will say, well, that's wrong. For me, I wouldn't change a thing. I remember having a lot of fun as a kid,
mm-hmm.
but I also remember learning a lot that has applied to my skill set my entire life.
Well, you consciously or otherwise, it sounds like you made a decision to regard that as an experience that was enjoyable, or at least referencing back to it, seeing it as a positive,
yeah.
versus just it's an arduous thing where all my friends are doing something else. I'm basically building a fence with my dad. I mean,
yeah.
you looked at it as a bonding and a connection to a unit, versus it's taking you away from something else, which is interesting. And the only reason I asked about the timeline, whether you said, okay, I'm going to go find myself and I'm going to go to Tahoe to do it and I'm going to give myself X, is because that is not something that is, in my experience, something you can really set a timeline on. It's something that's going to take it, like those, some journeys are just going to unfold at the pace they need to unfold.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you basically are just sitting there being not, you know, not needing to do other stuff and be productive and all this stuff, but there is a part of that growth that sometimes happens on its own pace. You realize that you needed to basically pursue something else because there was a void, and you took yourself and put yourself in a situation where that could be possible. So you're up in Tahoe, you're working at the casino.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Again, you know, you talk about putting vibration out there and being who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a local bagel shop that I'd go to every morning on my way to the casino. And there's a girl there that worked, her name was Stacy, real friendly girl. And when I was there in the morning, she says, hey, and you got to love these mountain towns. Everybody needs rides. They still hitchhike, but everybody's super nice. So she says, hey, on your way back home, could you drop me further down the road? I'm trying to get up to the ski resort. I'm like, why? Because this is the tail end of summer. She goes, oh, well, they're having their hiring fair and I'm going to turn in my application. I'm going to work there for the season, get my ski pass and, you know, basically snowboard all season, right?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you should put in an application and see if you can get a job up there. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. So I took her all the way to the ski resort instead of dropping her a mile down the road. And I met the general manager that she knew pretty well. And he learned about my In-N-Out history. He goes, hey, we'd love to have you. I said, really? Well, what do you have for me? He goes, well, we have lots of management jobs in food and beverage. If you'd like to take one of those, we'd love to have you. He was a big fan of In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Who knew, right?
Yeah.
So I said yes, and I landed a job at the ski resort as the food and beverage manager, and I was there for a full season. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, and this is where I started coming into my own, right? Because now I know food and beverage pretty well. I've been doing it the last 12, 13 years, but here I can be a little bit broader in what I'm doing. I'm not just making hamburgers. I've got a bakery. I've got a coffee shop. I've got three bars. I've got an Italian restaurant we're working with. So I was able to kind of explore all different genres, and I really enjoyed what I was doing. Plus, I was at the ski resort getting to snowboard every day. Yeah. And the food and beverage director left at the end of the year to go to Mammoth, and that job was wide open. And it was just handed to me on a silver platter. I said, well, with this job, you get to work over the summer because we don't want to lose you.
Right.
So now all of a sudden I had a great summer job working at the ski resort.
Right.
And at the beginning of the following year, I kicked off my career as a food and beverage director. It was a great ski resort. We became known for, and I don't want to take credit for the notion, but it was a day resort where we made high quality food.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would see at you know, Vail or something, right?
Yeah.
The previous guy, that was his idea, and I was able to execute it. So what it did is it garnered me
What's the name of the resort?
Sierra Tahoe Ski Resort, South Shore, outside of South Lake Tahoe, where the casinos are.
Mm-hmm.
But it also garnered me, and this is the fun part because it plays a role later, a weekly write-up in the newspaper with recipes and kind of what I'm doing at the ski resort. And then it also garnered me 3 years worth of TV. Every Saturday morning I did a very light cooking show on PAX TV for 20 minutes. So it was just a great time, and I really enjoyed being up in Lake Tahoe. But eventually you kind of burn out on the mountain life. It's like being on a mountain, like on a
cabin
small
fever
island.
After a while.
A little cabin fever.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so did you, I just want to step back. So you just kind of followed a career path from one job to the other then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Following passion and conviction for who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, because if I was chasing a dollar, first of all, I wouldn't have stayed in Tahoe for 2 days because there's no money up there. Like the top paying job up there is like 55 grand.
Yeah.
So it wasn't about that. I was just chasing my passion and conviction to be something other than what I was. Right.
Well, and you're enjoying your life doing it, and you have the wherewithal, at least a bit of the awareness, to actually allow yourself to enjoy it versus just be like day in, day out. You're actually enjoying living.
I think people would be blown away by how many different jobs they could do in their life if they gave it a chance, right? And they might find a lot more enjoyment in it. I think we're capable of a lot more than we give ourselves credit for. And that was one of the things that I was able to do up there, is just be open to an opportunity and say yes to that and go do it.
Do you think that's what it is, that we just basically kind of argue against taking that opportunity and saying yes? I mean, why is it that most people have a hard time with that, do you think?
Well, I think that they have expectations, whether that's from friends or family or what they believe that they should be. We talk a lot about on my show about, I always like to use the law degree as an example. Mm-hmm. Student goes to law school, gets his law degree, gets out of school, and then all of a sudden realizes, hey, I really want to bartend, mm-hmm. and I'm bartending at the St. Regis making $100,000 a year. But they live this, which is, by the way, a lot of, that's good money, great resort.
Yeah.
There's lots of benefits of doing that. But they live this life of guilt, like, oh, I've never used my law degree.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to feel guilty over that. That wasn't your passion. Mm-hmm. If it was, that's what you'd be pursuing. Mm-hmm. Enjoy what you're doing as a bartender mm-hmm. or whatever it is you decide mm-hmm. to do. And I think that a lot of times we have these unrealistic expectations that we have to be this thing.
Well,
right?
And carrying that disappointment or carrying that... you know, maybe I should have done something else with this with you. And that robs you from what you may be experiencing at the time, which is basically joyful and really maybe closer to what your soul is all about. What happens after Tahoe?
Well, I was with my ex-wife now. She had big cabin fever, and she says, I'm leaving the day this ski resort closes with or without you. I'm like, I guess I better go.
Right.
It was a great choice for me in the end. Came back down to Southern California. I worked for the Gallardi family for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Nice Wiener Schnitzel chain down here. Yeah. I helped them with some franchise contracts. But ultimately, I landed a job with Kettle One Vodka.
Okay.
And this was one of those big yeses. Okay, I want everybody to hear how this rolled out. It's not
necessarily, lay it on me.
It's just one of those, you know, right time, right place. So my wife at the time says, and I was surfing, right? Get out of the water. I'm wet and cell phone rings and, hey, I need you to get a tux and we're going to do this fundraiser tonight for the Pacific Symphony. I'm like, okay, well, that's a long ways from where I'm at right now because I'm in a wetsuit and I'm sandy. So I went and rented a tux and I went to this event and she was in charge of all the events at the Irvine Spectrum. And I happened to sit at the Kettle One table because they were a sponsor. And I was sitting next to the owner and the president of the company. We're all in tuxedos. We're all drinking apple martinis, having a good time. And Bill Aldean, who's the president of Kettle One, he goes, Jim, I really like your style. I looked at him. I said, Bill, we're all in tuxes drinking your vodka. Of course you like my style. He goes, I like your background in TV. I mean, we're looking at breaking into Hollywood with our brand and we want to be up in LA and, you know, dance with the stars type thing. I said, Bill, I'm not really sure you understood what kind of TV I was on up until.
He goes, no,
it's all the same. It's all the same. He goes, are you looking for a job? I said, well, not really. He goes, well, why don't you come in on Monday? We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So I did. I came in on Monday and he basically offered me a job on the spot. And what's interesting, and this kind of goes back to some of the topics.
Right place, right time.
Right place, right time. And I want to take that a step further because we talk a lot about this on my show, is he says, well, you know, you don't have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I don't, Bill. I said, is that important here? He goes, well, it's required. And I went back to him. I said, Bill, what will you have me do that I would have gained in my college degree? Because I think I can give you some life experience that would relate. And you know what he told me, which is actually shocking, but understandable, because we like to see somebody being committed to a project and following it through and coming out
the
other side.
So they're looking at the college degree as a pursuit that you commit to over a period of time.
Yeah, and I said, well, tell you what, I can do a little bit further than that. I said, I worked for In-N-Out Burger for 12 years and ran one of the busiest stores in the company history. To me, that's a lot of commitment.
Yeah.
He goes, you got the job.
Yeah.
Great career. And what was fantastic about working for Kettle One in my role, eventually as the vice president of public relations and events, is I had a big budget there, as you can imagine, with a big company like that.
Yep.
90% of my budget was to support nonprofits through our event activities, right? So we'd support by donating vodka to help them save costs and or help raise money for their charities across the country. Mm-hmm. It was the greatest experience of my life. I saw every celebrity imaginable and some really notable ones like Nelson Mandela out in New York and some of these greats that were out there. I wouldn't trade it for a thing.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. What's up, Paul?
Somebody just called in and asked a question here. I'm going to relate it to you. And it kind of, I don't know, I'm just going to try and summarize it here because they were just so moved by your story here. This is what Rad hits all the time in this show. This counter narrative that you don't have to have it all figured out. That you just have to have the courage to realize you're on a journey.
So somebody we've paid?
No, they didn't say all this, but I thought to me it provoked this in me too.
Yeah.
So their question is, what do you say to people, young people today, who think they have to have it all figured out by the time they're 16. You know, Tiger Woods had to start practicing when he was 6 because to beat everybody. This notion that you have to have your life figured out really early, and then you got to work 10 times harder than everybody else.
Let me add another layer to that. Is, yes, societal pressure, family dynamics, could you even argue sibling, you know, dynamics, all this stuff.
Rad's felt it, I've felt it, we've all lived
it. Multitudes of expectations that you put on yourselves and that are put on you, and not necessarily from a malicious perspective, but where you walk around with this, you know, list of accomplished things that you need to achieve in order to have some self-worth or some feeling
I'll bare my soul
and
here.
And it's very early. I mean,
we've talked about this before, maybe not in this depth, but you know, I was on the fast track. I grew up in an affluent upper middle class group. My dad was an executive with a car company, and everybody in my high school went to college, and I went to an upper school and all this stuff, and graduated Phi Beta Kappa, all that stuff and everything, and then went to law school, only because I didn't know what else to do. It was just expected of me. My dad wanted it. I had a political science degree. What else am I going to do? I wasn't ready to go out and get a job. Okay, I'll just keep going to school. I'm really good at this. And I hated it. Hated it with a passion. Dropped out after a year, a big law school.
And then come full circle, here you are 4 years after basically walking into this room, and you basically are doing exactly what you did in college.
Exactly.
You had a good
college
time.
Radio. Yeah. I did college radio, and I was too afraid to follow. I got a real job in real radio. That was too frightening to stay and follow. And for 40 years, my dad beat me up about dropping out of law school and falling off the path. Hmm. And the new path I found was wandering and all over the place, and I did 100 different things like you did.
And it probably wasn't just your dad beating up.
Me too.
You were beating up on yourself, right?
I still do to a certain degree sometimes. I walked away from a...
So the question, Jim, I think, if I can summarize Paul's emotional...
Outburst.
Which
he warned me.
Which are very rare, by the way, not on the show, right? We call this the Paul Roberts
therapy hour,
right?
Yeah.
But... the question is, what do you tell people? How do you tell people that basically have expectations put on them from the time that they haven't started to talk yet?
Yeah.
And we all start worrying about the fact that my child is a late talker.
My grandson, we're trying to figure out how to get him ahead, so when he starts school, he's ahead of everybody, and we'll quickly try and find what he's good at, and then we'll try and focus on it, and we'll hope that he's figured out a career by the time he's 12, we're going to set him on a path.
What do you tell the person who's having those pressures put upon them, and also what do you tell the people that feel that is the best way to motivate?
Well, there's three things.
Well, you're a parent, you got kids.
Yeah, I'm a parent, and you want the best for your kids too, right? You want them to be all these things, but I have to remember what worked for me. I was fortunate early enough to see Mark Victor Hansen speak in person.
Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Yep,
co-author, and he has a line that is, what you believe is what you will achieve. So at an early age, 16, 17-ish, I really took that into a factor in who I was and what I wanted to be. Now, I didn't apply it till much later in life, but when I look back, knowing that what you believe is what you'll achieve and always kind of hanging on to that, that was one thing. At a young age, my grandfather, who I mentioned I worked for a couple summers, he always talked about having goals. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a goal-driven person. And I know that at 16 or 14 or whatever age you're at, even somebody in their 50s or later, it's hard to have goals. But if you can take the time to write down what you think are a couple short-term goals and a couple long-term goals, and it's almost a cliche to say that, right? You know, write down your goals and go after them. But if you took the time to actually do that and think about that and dig into what that goal actually means to you... Mm-hmm. Then things will start to unfold, and you'll uncover a little bit more about who you are, what you like to do, and why you like to do that. And it's not to say that those goals don't change over time.
No, they have to be malleable.
Exactly. And they will probably always change. But understanding where you're heading, it really can change your thought process in a positive way.
You could almost argue that even not knowing what's next and putting yourself on a path to Tahoe was a goal. You made a goal of going to Tahoe to figure it out. So the goal was to figure it out, not necessarily what you were going to end up with.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of times I know myself, I've had to remind myself that it wasn't necessarily, it's goal setting, and you feel like intimidated by the fact that you got to set goals and achieve them. And then you go, well, hold on a second. part of setting the goals could be as simple as setting the goal to figure something out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not necessarily what the end result was going to be. And that's where, again, also leaving yourself the ability and the room to be okay with what that result is, and rather than so control it that you basically are not saying yes to the process. Because that's the other thing, too. It's not just the end. I mean, you know, the cliche of, you know, happiness is not a destination, it's a journey. It's very true.
They're cliches for a reason.
Because a lot of people use them because they have a lot of truth.
Well, they do have a lot of truth. Yeah. And if you take the time to listen to some of these truths that are out there, they might just apply and they might help make a difference in your life. I'm working with a client, to your point.
Yeah.
I do some life coaching, and this person's goal is to be out of debt, right? But he has to make a goal to have the conversation with his spouse about getting out of debt. You know, so his goal is really short term, just to have a conversation for the much bigger
goal. The bigger goal.
But as you said, sometimes it's just having the goal is setting a goal.
Yeah.
And if you know, another cliche, right? If you go to the grocery store without a list, you're going to get everything you don't need, and you'll probably miss a whole bunch of stuff that's probably sitting on the counter, right? Your list.
Yep.
But if you take the list, you get everything on the list, and then maybe some extras.
You know,
it works every time.
You know, Jim, it's funny. I tell people I don't make lists. I don't do the listing. I don't plan. I don't make lists, right? And they all laugh at me. Because just because I don't put it on a piece of paper doesn't mean that it's not in my head, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because there's a part of me that's just, I'm going to rebel against anything that's structured and organized. And then I look back and I go, dang it, I'm actually structured and organized. It's like, you know, I had a conversation yesterday with somebody who said, you know what, it's a very sobering moment when you realize that you're basically channeling your parents.
Yeah.
Right? And you go, oh, so this is what I rebelled against. But in fact, it's as core as anything. So Kettle One, you're there. Doing great. You're pretty high up in a position. You have a lot of latitude in what you're getting involved in. You're participating in stuff with nonprofits. What happens after Kettle One?
And we gotta sum it up in a minute or two because we got your next show ready to go here.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you that. So I said yes to starting my own tequila company, which lasted for 8 years. It's still around, but I was there for 8 years until I basically stepped away and semi-retired. I raised over $11 million in that company. It's got a high valuation. And I'm enjoying my life now with my kids. With Baja United, I import wine from
Mexico.
What's
the name of the tequila company?
Azuña Tequila.
Azuña Tequila, yeah.
Yep. So now I'm importing wine from Mexico through Baja United Group, and we're donating money back to the orphanages. So I came full circle all the way back to the reason why I left all that money in the first place was to give back more, and we're still giving back, saying yes to that.
But anybody who's been listening to the story, I think the giving back component has always been part of your life journey. And you just find different ways of doing it that are also fulfilling your other.
So how do you stay faithful to this belief that it'll all work out? That's the one I struggle with.
Well, the question is, how do you stay faithful to yourself?
Okay, even that. But when, you know...
Well, isn't that what we're talking about?
He had some tough moments in there, a bunch of them, when it must have thought, hey, I took the wrong path. I jumped off. I shouldn't have jumped off.
Well, let's not make that assumption. Did you ever find yourself in that situation?
Oh, listen, it's tough. You know, you're not going to get a free ride in this world. You know, you're going to. And at the end of the day, you know, again, I do some other work, so I do some keynote speeches where I pick up a hammer. And I said, "When's the last time you picked up a hammer and actually worked hard?"
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people forget how it is to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to put in the time, but if you put in the time, you're consistent, you're passionate, and you're authentic, you're going to see the results you want to get because people want to be a part of that. You know, you're putting off that vibration.
Well, there's no substitution to that kind of authenticity.
No. I'm saying this, that, and then I'll wrap. I think we're going to wrap up because Craig's ready to go here. You decide I'm going to follow my passion. I'm going to be true to myself. I'm going to jump off the career path. I'm going to try something different, the road less traveled. And you go in, and it doesn't work, or it's a struggle. It's not working like you thought it was going to work. Most people at that point in time start to question whether or not I made the right decision. And lose their commitment. They go back. They give up. They give in. How do you stay the course, even when it doesn't look like it's working? How do you know
when it's bleakest?
How do you hang in there?
It's a good question. What I do is a lot of visualization. I visualize what that finish line looks like. I visualize what success looks like. I visualize what we're able to do for others.
Mm-hmm.
right? I'm a competitive racer. Earlier this year, I was rated number one in the world for men over 50 in the Spartan Race Series, right? Because I visualized that finish line and what it was going to be like to be there. And that's when you're going to hit the hardest times.
Yeah.
The two businesses that I started, I lost a partner almost immediately because they didn't see the end, right? It was too hard. They weren't willing to put in the work. And you've got to be willing to put in the work, visualize what success looks like, and go after it. Be driven in between. That, between that start and finish line, you got to be driven every day for what your goals and objectives are.
You know, I'll just let me add to this. I think that that is a very, very critical tool because, especially in this day and age, there's so much that inundates us on a daily basis. There's so much that basically acts as a distraction from that clarity on a daily basis, on a momentary basis, that you have to be a little bit selfish, I think, with yourself to say, I want to stay the course. This is important. This visualization, this goal setting, this thing that is important for me to try to achieve is important enough to fight for me, between me and myself. And that's the hardest battle, by the way, because there's other things that will come your way that will distract you. There's things that will happen that will require immediate instantaneous reaction and, you know, stepping away and taking care of them. And it's very easy to lose focus of that, but visualization is pretty clear. I did it this morning. I had about 10 things that were coming at me at the same time. And I'm on top of that, and people can hear, I'm dealing with a little bit of a Charlie horse, I'm a little sick here today. And I literally had to say, no, I'm putting in these barriers for that moment. Right now, I'm putting these barricades in for the next 10 minutes, and I'm clearing my head. And that was an important thing to do, because I knew if I did not, I would be reeling for the rest of the day,
yeah,
trying to basically regain and recenter. And those things are really critical. And I think hopefully these are things that we pick up either by dealing with, you know, with somebody like you in terms of the podcast or even the coaching, or, you know, by opening up and talking. That's the other thing too, is we, and Jim and I have talked about this before, is that we live in a society right now where people don't talk to one another.
Yeah.
They talk at each other, but they don't talk to one another. They don't share openly from a place of giving, right, without any kind of reciprocation in mind. And so we need to learn how to do that again and do that with people that we are close to and family members and maybe people that
but
are not,
you know,
necessarily family
we
members.
We need to do it another day because we're out of time.
We do, but before we go, Jim, give people the links and how they can get a hold of you, because I think you have a lot of stuff that is very valuable and people should be aware of.
Yeah, please find me on iTunes. The Answer Is Yes podcast. Just do a basic search for that. The Answer Is Yes podcast. We have a lot of guests. We have these types of conversations,
yeah,
every Wednesday.
Yeah.
On Mondays, I do a Baja session show. We talk about the orphanages and things that are happening down in Baja. You can find me on Instagram, Jim Riley Racing. Right.
Yep.
And
yep.
Spartan Strong at 50. Doing a lot of great things. You know, visualizing, I am open to anybody that wants to reach out through any direct messages, and I'm happy to get them and help support, do whatever I can, help maybe help with some visualization, life coaching, whatever it is. I'm here. I'm giving back.
What's the Baja United website?
It's BajaUnitedWines.com.
Go check it out. Yeah. The amazing wines. And yes, I did say from Baja, and you have an education in front of you.
There's
so
some
go
great
find out about it. It's really great.
Yeah.
Jim, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate
it. Was awesome.
It.
Yeah. Good times.
All right. And how do they reach you, Rod, if they have to?
They can reach me at, I don't know, just put Rod on the internet. It'll come up. R-A-A-D.
Anywhere and everywhere.
R-A-A-D-G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S at gmail.com. Or you can reach us on The Rad Life on Facebook. I mean, you pretty much trip all over me if you put in R-A-A-D on the internet.
All over.
Well, we're
all
tripping
over
into the next show. So we'll
thanks for being
down
here, guys. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.